From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet, and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And, you know, the guest that we have this hour, he's not only a great friend of mine, but it brings up a sense of nostalgia because around a year ago, I had J.R. Yarnell on Speaking of Strange, talking about his gigantic Asheville tattoo event. And he, at one point during the interview, said something about a puppy kissing booth. And immediately I thought of the idea of the puppy fest, which is something I'd been wanting to produce for many, many years. And since then, as unlikely as it may seem, we leapt from tattoos to puppies. And JR and I, we got together, we produced the big inaugural Puppy Fest in Asheville, shot a fantastic television pilot with the help of C. Eric Scott. Mr. Forrest Connor, you were one of the cameramen.
Yes.
And now we have this just riveting pilot for a TV show called Puppy Fest that is currently being shopped to various TV networks, and thus far the response is so positive that I think there's a very good chance we're going to have this TV show Puppy Fest coming out soon. So, again, it's nice to reflect on how all these connections are made, how they all come together, and yet, in the meantime, tattoos are still the dominant force, the dominant factor for Mr. J.R. Yarnell, and he is on the line with us right now. J.R., welcome back to Speaking of Strange.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And it's funny you tell that story. I was telling it about 2 hours ago to a friend of mine. And, it's amazing how the world works.
What is the connection between tattoos and puppies? Because you actually made that connection, JR.
You know, the connection for me is always with the Tattoo Fest. We try to do a lot of charity work, and I am a sucker for dogs. And so this year we'll have the Asheville Humane Society out there as well as some of the other pet charities. And once again, we'll be doing a puppy kissing booth at the festival. And for me, whenever I do something, I try to find a way to give back. And when I'm looking at charities to help out, I often look at pets.
Well, as you know, I don't have any tattoos, and yet I went to your event last year, and I just immediately fell in love with the incredible artwork and the sincerity of all the people who do it. I mean, this is your third year producing a giant event like this. It's always right around St. Patrick's Day, right?
Absolutely. We always shoot for St. Patrick's Day weekend, and we always end up kicking off the festival season in Asheville.
Okay, so for people who are listening to the show right now, whether or not they're into tattoos, and I've just given my own personal testament as to how cool this event is, regardless of whether or not you're a tattoo person, tell everybody what you have put together and why this is such an amazing event.
We really shoot for a weekend-long festival that's got something for everyone but is built around and centered in the arts. And obviously the heart of that is tattooing, but this year is going to be a lot bigger than it's ever been in the past, and a lot of the other events that we have going on are there to make sure that even people who don't necessarily want to get tattooed at the show or people who don't have tattooing as their primary interest still have plenty to keep them entertained. So we're going to have a classic hot rod show that's sponsored by the Bootleggers Car Club, and it's an invitation-only show with pre-1968 hot rods, and these are some beautiful, amazing cars that you've seen in magazines. We're going to have the roller derby girls coming out and doing an exposition bout for us. We've got a pop-up art gallery going on. We have pin-up contests, tattoo contests. You know, there's a variety of activities all weekend long between the Renaissance Hotel and the Masonic Temple on Broadway, so that somebody, there's something there for everyone. You can come out with your whole family. There's kids' activities, and really just have a good weekend.
You know, when I went to your event last year, it was overwhelming in terms of the numbers of people. I mean, you have thousands of people from all over the country, and really all over the world, who come to this event. I mean, this is actually kind of an international event, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. And our reputation is really that of one of the top-rated tattoo conventions in the country. And because of that, people want to travel and be there. They want their name associated with it. The artists want to come and win trophies at the convention because of the reputation of the convention, those trophies really count. They help them get magazine coverage. They help them get TV shows, that kind of thing. So, yeah, so we really have artists from all over the world fighting to get in. And it lets us pick the best of the best, and it's just fantastic. Everyone has a really great time, and we get to see stellar artwork being produced all weekend long.
So now here you are, JR, in your third year, and I've produced big events over the years, and not tattoo events, but paranormal events and whatnot. What have you learned after doing this for 2 years that is going to make this third year even more stellar?
Well, the biggest thing for me, the first year, of course, was a tremendous learning curve. The second year, I kind of thought I had it down, and it turned out that we really did, and the event went very smoothly. And so this year, we decided to go back a little bit more to where we were the first year and really expand the festival and add a lot to it. And so we've got a lot more balls in the air this year, and it's been a lot of fun getting everything coordinated and lined up and coming down to the wire here. It's really coming together beautifully, and I'm just excited about it. So for me, the big thing that I learned was don't ever let it get easy and just keep expanding it and keep it fun and exciting for everyone and make it better every year.
So now, as a guy who produces a gigantic tattoo fest that is internationally renowned, tell me about the very first tattoo that you got. What's the story of your first tattoo, JR?
My first tattoo, I was living in South Carolina when it was illegal, and so some friends of mine and I in college jumped into a car, drove over the border to North Carolina to the first tattoo shop that we found. I got a tattoo which is absolutely atrocious, which I proudly display on my shoulder and refuse to have removed as a reminder that people should go find really quality tattoo artists and get really good tattoos.
But you won't tell us what it is, will you?
it is a very classic 90s tribal sun on my shoulder. And when my body is covered head to toe and I run out of space, I'll burn it off with a laser and have a lot of good real estate for my last tattoo.
So the moment that the tattoo, the needle, the gun hit your arm, did you immediately think, oh, this was not as painful as I thought it was going to be, or was it more painful?
I don't think it's too bad, and everybody reacts a little bit differently to it. For me, I think of it as somebody scratching a sunburn, and I've seen people who are in a lot of pain from it. It's definitely not comfortable, but it's not unbearable.
So you're not a masochist, then? You don't
want not at all. I don't like getting tattooed. I like having tattoos.
and what is the longest that you've ever actually sat to receive a tattoo?
The longest I ever sat was 7 hours, and that was plenty long enough.
Well, and what part of your body was that?
That was on the back of my left arm, and I had to sit in a very uncomfortable folding chair at a convention in a really weird position where my arm fell asleep about every 20 minutes, and it was not the most comfortable day, but it's probably my best tattoo, and I absolutely love it.
So when you get tattooed, do you feel any kind of a difference if they're using just black ink versus color? Is that something you can perceive, or is it all the same?
The biggest difference you'll notice is when they're using liners versus shaders. And I personally prefer shaders to liners. I don't think they hurt quite as much. But everybody reacts to it a little bit differently. So,
okay, now tell us the difference between a liner and a shader.
Liners have really small, tight needle groupings. And so when an artist puts a stencil on, the first thing they'll do is go through and put all the line work into it to give the basic structure to it. Then they'll switch to a much larger, wider, looser needle grouping, and they'll do all the shading. And for me, that hurts less. I know people that it's exactly the opposite. But, you know, at the end of the day, it hurts, but it's not terrible.
Now, you and I have had many conversations about tattoos, and unfortunately, this is not the part of the program we call the Dark 30 Hour, so we can't be too specific about some of the places that you have seen people get tattoos, but I know that you have seen people get tattoos on every conceivable inch of skin, but from the people you have talked to, what do you think is the most sensitive and painful place to receive a tattoo?
You know, it's pretty easy. If you don't want to get pinched on a part of your body, if it hurts a lot, it's going to hurt more to get tattooed there. And so for most people, it's like your stomach is not very pleasant, you know, sort of soft, tender spots like that, so without getting too specific to other regions. So
now, at your tattoo fest, you know, again, I walked in there. You know, literally looking like, you know, just the nerdiest guy possible, you know, wearing a blazer. And I'm just wandering around and I'm seeing people who are just grinning ear to ear, having what appears to be the best day of their lives. And I'm looking at all this amazing, elaborate artwork all over the place. And I would love to see, you know, what everybody got when they went to the event. But question is, what has been a tattoo that you have seen somebody get at your event that you were impressed by?
There are too many. I remember judging the first year for the Tattoo for Best in Show, and we were looking at three amazing pieces, and we were standing there for about 20 minutes, and we just couldn't decide. They were all so fantastic. You know, one of them was a color realistic trout swimming through a stream, and you could see the sunlight glittering through the water off the rocks and the scales, and I mean, it looked like a photograph. And another one was this incredibly beautiful sort of half portrait of a woman in an Art Nouveau style that looked like a painting. I mean, the level of the artwork is so fantastic, you know, and you're right. People do walk around with huge grins on their faces. I mean, the tattoo community is the nicest people you're ever going to meet. They might look like they're not going to be the nicest people on earth, but they are the nicest people on earth. Everybody shows up. Everybody has a great time. Everybody walks around seeing this phenomenal art. All kinds of fun stuff going on. We always have free moonshine tastings, and this year we're going to have free Sailor Jerry rum, so everybody's in a pretty happy mood by the end of the day. And, it's a great time. And really, it's all about the art at the end of the day, but it's also about the community hanging out and having fun.
Okay, so, JR, hang on through this break, because, folks, when we come back, I'm going to delicately see if we can get JR to tell us the story about the craziest tattoo experience he's ever seen. He knows what I'm talking about. We'll see if he can make this FCC friendly. His website is AshevilleTattooExpo.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
Two and one. We'll be right back.
It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. And I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, broadcasting around the world to high strangers around the globe. You are listening to Speaking of Strange. And right now, I'm talking with J.R. Yarnell, producer of the third annual Asheville Tattoo and Arts Expo. The website is AshevilleTattooExpo.com. It's March 14, 15, and 16 of this year, of course, and we're going to have that linked up for you at SpeakingOfStrange.com, where you'll find all kinds of links, including a live chat during the show, more information on topics discussed, our Twitter feed, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So, JR, you, sir, you're a very diplomatic man, and you know we are on FCC-regulated radio. I know you've been thinking over the break, how am I going to describe what Joshua alluded to before the break? Do your best, JR. Lay it on us. What is the type of thing that once in a while can happen at a tattoo fest? Not yours, necessarily, but can happen at a fest.
Well, I know the story you're alluding to, and it did not happen at our festival, and we've never had anything along those lines. But, you know, getting tattooed at a tattoo convention, obviously there's not the greatest amount of privacy. So for the most part, people are getting their arms done and their legs done and things like that. But a friend of mine happened to be at a convention in South Florida, which fits with South Florida, where there was a young lady who worked as a professional dancer of a more exotic persuasion who was getting a cover-up tattoo in a certain part of her body that probably is only seen during her working hours. And it turned out that it was not her first cover-up, but her third cover-up tattoo of that part of her body. And there she was in the middle of the convention for all the world to see, correcting her second mistake. Well, I'm sure not the second mistake of her life. But, So there could be some strange occurrences going on. But that really, we keep our show very family-friendly, and that's something we've never had an issue with at our show. But there are definitely some that get a little bit more wild than ours do.
Well done, sir. See, you should be, you either have to be a politician or a radio host. You've got the skills. Oh, man. Well, so now, this event is going to be so big. I mean, honestly, JR, you have to be under a lot of stress right now, because you are, I mean, are you pretty much the producer of this event, or what's your role?
I'm one of the three partners. So James Bond and Scotty Whitaker and I do the show together. And yeah, this is the time when we're all running around like chickens with our heads cut off. And Friday, March 14th at about 5 p.m., we're all going to have a big sigh when everything's going off without a hitch, and it's going to be great, and we'll probably pop open a nice cold PBR and enjoy the rest of the weekend from there. But for now, it's chasing down all the details. You know, there's a lot going on, and it takes a lot to get it organized, but it's so worth it when it comes off, and you just see everybody having a fantastic time all weekend long.
Wow, so you've got some highfalutin partners here. I mean, for those who like to watch the tattoo shows, talk a little bit about who James Vaughn is and you know, your partnerships in general.
Sure. James Vaughn, he was the runner-up on the first season of Ink Master, and he's probably one of the best traditional Japanese tattooers in the game today. Super amazingly great guy and absolutely hysterical, and has been in this industry for 20 years, and he knows everyone at the top level of the industry, and he and Scotty work really hard to make sure that the artists that come to our show are absolutely fantastic. And so our artist roster includes, you know, like the people from Tattoo Nightmares, Ink Masters, a lot of the famous TV tattooers, but then also we get a lot of the pioneers of the industry who really created the modern tattoo industry, people like Philip Delta Eddy come to the show. Mike Skiver is going to be there. He's probably the biggest tattoo historian alive today. And at the same time, we get the really up-and-coming people that, you know, it's been fun over the first couple of years to watch some of the tattooers that we saw and had our eye on and brought to the show because we wanted to help them get exposure. And now they're in the magazines and getting the TV shows and stuff like that. And so, you know, we get the best and the brightest of the old and the new and the current and the celebrity and the under-the-radar sort of people, and it's really, really fantastic to watch everybody work and have a good time over the weekend.
Now, you know, I always tell people, JR, that you're a real dapper Dan, you know? I mean, you're always wearing a fedora, you're always extremely well-dressed, you are one of those guys who just kind of stands out in a crowd, because there's never a wrinkle or a crease that doesn't need to be there in your clothes, and nobody would look at you just on the street and think that you have tattoos. In fact, I knew you for a couple years, and one night I was like, JR, please show me your tattoos, which usually that's not something that a man says to another man, like, strip and let me see things. But we did that. We had that night. We shared that experience. And so let me ask you this. You do have some unbelievably well-crafted, just, you know, artistic tattoos on your body. So, is there like a dream artist out there for you? If you right now were given that golden ticket and you could find the perfect artist in the world to do the perfect tattoo, is there some type of ultimate goal for you?
You know, there's a lot of artists that I want to get tattooed by, and one of the things about conventions is they're built for tattoo collectors, you know, people who want to get tattooed by a lot of the top people in the game. And so, you know, for me, I've been talking with a buddy of mine named Marshall Bennett, who's an incredible black and gray artist, about my next tattoo for, I don't know, close to a year now. And I might just do it at the convention this time around. But that's the beauty of it, is when you have 100 artists who are all absolutely amazing and all tattoo in different styles, whatever it is that you've been wanting that maybe isn't available in your hometown, you know, if you live in Greenville, South Carolina, and there doesn't happen to be somebody there that does fantastic black and gray portraits, you can drive up the hill for an hour and you can find a half a dozen people who are absolutely the best of the best and get work that you couldn't get in other places. And so for me, my thing is I'm going to be tattooed by dozens and dozens of people. And I'm very picky about who I allow to tattoo me, and I can tell you there's probably 40-plus artists that are going to be at the convention that I want to get tattooed by.
Now, one thing that I find also fascinating about you, and I'm sure that most people who know you, you know, think of you as an enigmatic man, you've done the Tattoo Fest, you produced the Puppy Fest with me, but I hope it's okay to say this, JR. Last December, I went to Krampusnacht in West Asheville, and you had told me, oh, there's a Krampusnacht going on, and it's going to be great at the auditorium. And so I showed up there, and I had my sister Jessica with me, and we had a great time. And then I realized you pretty much put that together. Is this just like an obsession? You just have to put little events together all the time? I mean, tell us about Krampusnacht and some of the other stuff that you're putting together.
I like doing events, and that really grew out of the fact that I like doing charity work. And so Krampusnacht was a fundraiser for Elida Homes, which is a local children's charity in Asheville area. And that was fantastic. Yeah, we paired up with the auditorium and my tattoo shop, Freaks and Geeks, and we had a great crowd out there, and we got a lot of people dressed up like Krampus, which, if people don't know, he's sort of the counterpart to Santa Claus in much of the Alps in Europe, and he's the one who comes to pay children a visit if they're on the naughty list, and is a very classic horned demon-looking guy who has a reputation for beating children with birch switches and dragging them off in a bag if they've been bad for Christmas instead of good. And so it was a really fun night. We had a lot of people in costume out there. We raised some money for charity, and we all just had a good time.
Yeah, we pride ourselves on informing people about who Krampus is. But, JR, we've got about 1 minute left. Tell everybody whatever you want them to know regarding your event.
Well, I got to say that this is the weekend not to miss in Asheville. We've partnered up with so many different people to bring so much fun. So it's PBR and Sailor Jerry and Carolina Distillery on that end. We've got the Blue Ridge Roller Girls. We've got hot rods. We've got face painting. We've got live model painting. We're doing a pop-up art gallery at the Masonic Lodge. Live music. It's just, there's something there for everyone. And I'm really excited this year we're doing a food truck showdown in the parking lot of the Masonic Lodge, where we're going to have about 15 of the best food trucks in Asheville to kind of highlight our unique, quirky culinary arts, and we've got a celebrity panel of judges that will be choosing the best truck. And that event's going to raise a lot of money for the Humane Society and Mana Food Bank and Pinups for Pitbulls and some of the other local charities. So really, it's just a great way to come out and have a fantastic time, help out some charities, and really enjoy the beginning of spring.
All right, everybody, AshevilleTattooExpo.com. When we come back, I'm going to talk about what I discovered at NASA and the UFO that I saw. J.R. Yarnell, thank you for being on the program, my friend. We're going to take a break. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. This is what's going through my head when I visit NASA. It's the soundtrack to the right stuff. Pretty awesome, really. I mean, if you think about it that way, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Right Stuff, but if not, watch that movie. I mean, it's about, actually my favorite part of the movie is the first part when Chuck Yeager breaks the sound barrier. And you're thinking, man, that guy has balls. And then from there, it goes into the space race. It's a great movie. By the way, welcome back. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and you're listening to Speaking of Strange. And, you know, I teased a little earlier in the show the fact that I actually went to the big NASA facility there in Houston, Texas. And, oh, man. They point out this little white, well, container, I think I can say, that they claim is about the size of a minivan designed to take two or three people to Mars and back. 6 months one way, 6 months back. And if you've seen the movie Apollo 13, you know, like, yeah, maybe they'll make it back, right? But after that, they have this robot sitting there. If you go to speakingofstrange.com, you can see a picture of this thing. And what I was alluding to earlier is that they actually told us that this robot has such dexterous hands that look just like your hands, that this robot can actually turn the fine pages of a book without tearing them. And that robot, now listen to this, think about this, that robot can see a big paragraph, a big chunk of text, and then take a touchpad out, just like you have on your cell phone, and type that entire paragraph without making one error. That is how amazing this robot is. Talk about creepy. This is some Stanley Kubrick-esque type stuff. Okay. So I go through this whole NASA thing, and I'm looking at, you know, the latest, greatest stuff that they're showing off. And, you know, unfortunately, hey, this is radio, so I have to be a little bit reserved about how much I say. But fact of the matter is, I am one of these Forrest Gump type figures. No pun intended, Forrest Connor. And I end up rubbing the right elbows, and I end up getting to go to a big-ass dinner that is occurring that day at the NASA Museum. This is not the kind of thing that I set out to do. It's almost unbelievable that this happened to me. But I did get access. Now, Shelley Wright, you know what I'm talking about. I told you how this happened.
Yes.
Yes. But I'm not going to say this on the radio because I have to have something for myself.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So I go to this dinner, and all these scientists are around, and I'm meeting people, and I don't know who they are at first. Some of them are astronauts. And they start talking about the new, big, amazing thing that NASA is about to release. The Dragon. The Dragon was under a drape. Forrest, do I have your attention?
You do.
I know, you're a technology man. This is pretty cool, isn't it? I got to see this thing called the Dragon that NASA is about to unveil. My wife, on the other hand, was in a hurry to get out of there, and so I didn't get to spend as much time as I wanted to. I know. Yes. Yeah. Oh, believe me, she heard all about it, yeah. But I never actually saw the cloth pulled off the thing.
Oh.
But they said it is the most amazing, powerful engine that has ever been created in the history of humankind. It is called the Dragon. And, you know, at first I just thought, oh, that's a cool name. And then later I talked to somebody else and they were like, oh, well, why do you think they call it the Dragon? And I was like, oh, light bulb. The Chinese. The Chinese are buying up everything, right? They're owning everything. It would make sense that this would be a Chinese-funded project. So I don't know more than, I had all kinds of very interesting conversations with scientists and journalists and things. All I can tell you is that at NASA, they were doing a big unveiling of this thing called the Dragon, and it's an engine. And so jump on Google. I haven't done this in a while, but do it now. Jump on Google, look up Dragon. Who knows what you will find? That's pretty cool. Huh, Forrest?
Yeah.
But it gets cooler.
Your wife lets you go back.
Well, I had to catch a plane flight early the next morning.
Okay.
That story is over with. That story is done. But now we move on to the UFOs that I saw. Now, earlier in the show, I talked about Linda Kladowski. She came down here with her daughter, Toni. They are both fantastic friends of mine. We've had all kinds of adventures together. And I read this glowing review that Linda gave. And when they were down here in Puerto Rico, which, as we know, is a big hot spot for UFOs, we actually went out next to one of the bio bays one night. And Linda took a pair of third-generation night vision goggles, and she saw a UFO, an unidentified flying object that went zipping around in the air. That is always exciting, but it happens frequently down here. I mean, yeah, Shelley, you were down here in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
You remember people freaking out when we were doing our rooftop party and seeing UFOs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so now, the last expedition that I did was with Missy and Ron Hill. And Missy Hill, of course, has been on the show numerous times. She has her own show, Galactic Earth Fusion. She is the queen of conspiracy. And so Missy, and there were some other people on the expedition, but I don't want to say exactly who because, you know, I'm always very careful about that because I don't want to incriminate people. Maybe you've said I'm walking the Appalachian Trail or something, and then I get on the radio and say, no, they were on a big expedition. So, oh, man, it's time for a break. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about this UFO that I actually saw with my own eyes. And then I'm going to try to squeeze in something amazing that I learned about what's happening down here in Puerto Rico.
Josh, you just got a minute and a half here, so.
I got a minute and a half?
You got a minute and a half, baby.
Okay. I'm going to take this minute and a half and I'm going to run with it. I'm going to tell you that we went to the Laguna Cartagena. You've heard me talk about this. The UFO Lagoon. And when you go out there, this is a lagoon that is surrounded by the oldest hills in the entire Caribbean. So if aliens have been visiting us for millions of years, the very first time that they would have seen rocks emerge from the ocean, from volcanic activity, would have been when they saw the peaks around the Laguna Cartagena come up, the first sample of terra firma. So this may be the oldest UFO base in the region. We went out there, we climbed the top of the observation tower, and when we come back, I'll tell you what we saw. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. Tonight, speaking of strange, next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour, and that's, well, as usual, when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So if that's right for you, stick around. If not, no, at the end of this hour, just tune out. Just turn off the radio. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and, you know, I was telling you about strange objects. Well, just recently, how long has it been? Like a week ago? I think like maybe a little over a week ago, something like that. Missy and Ron Hill came down here, and they did their West Coast expedition, and we went out to the Lagoon in Cartagena, the UFO Lagoon. Here we are standing on top of the observation tower, and Missy goes, "What is that? Oh, my God. What is that?" And we look out on the water, and seriously, there is what appears to be a silver ball reflecting the light like a mirror, twinkling and dancing back and forth on the surface of the lagoon near the shore. And, I mean, at first, we're thinking, okay, well, there must be a logical explanation. You know, maybe this is just the sunlight reflecting. Could this be a fish with a tag on its fin? We were there for over 30 minutes, maybe 45 minutes. C. Eric Scott is capturing this in amazing high definition. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of photographs taken of this silver ball dancing around on the surface of the laguna. And I swear to God, I have no idea what this thing is that we were looking at. What makes this all even more amazing, and by the way, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you can see a picture of this, is that just a few days before this, I met a man named Daniel Velez, who has been seeing UFOs around here in Puerto Rico for years. And he says he has some Taino heritage, which is the native sort of Indian heritage here. And he said that sometimes the beings, the visitors, just sort of tell him, he just hears their voice in his head, to go outside and start taking pictures. And he captures these amazing things. In fact, if you go to joshuapwarren.com, there's no period after the P, go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll see a still from some of his footage that shows one of the things, these bizarre UFOs that he captured, just hovering there in the air over the Boquerón beach. And Daniel, I talked to him. He felt good about me. He actually stopped. He paused. He closed his eyes. He sort of took a deep breath and sensed my energy and thought I was a good person. And he said, "I'm going to give you a symbol, but it's only for you. My father gave it to me. Now I'm giving this to you." He gave me a symbol, and he said, "You keep this thing in your pocket, you put it on your wall, and this will attract them." And that was just a few days before we saw what we saw at the Laguna, which, again, you can see if you go to joshuapwarren.com or speakingofstrange.com. I'll tell you one last thing before we hit this break. You know, I've been to Arecibo many, many times, and you might think of Arecibo
as just a gigantic dish that receives subtle satellite information because it's the largest radio satellite on planet Earth. But I went there this time, and the guide told me they've been doing some new experiments with the ionosphere, and I thought that was very interesting because the HARP project has an outpost down here. And I said to the tour guide, how much energy are you guys pumping out of that dish? And she said 10,000 megawatts. Now, most gigantic radio stations are like 150,000 watts. They're pumping 10,000 million watts out of that dish into space for about 45 minutes at a time. I ask her, what happens to the wildlife when you do that? She goes, oh, well, if there's birds or nests and eggs around, they just explode. I was kind of amazed that she said that. It is a freaking death ray that's being beamed into the cosmos. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it'll be the dark 30 hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange.
Nikola Tesla called. He wants his death ray back.